Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm sad to be back from vacation, but yeah. I'm doing fine otherwise.
That's good. You went to Ireland, right?
I went to Ireland.
Was that fun?
It was awesome. I went there for a wedding. It was a huge party. Drank a lot of Guinness and Irish whiskey, and now I'm back.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have plenty to talk about today. We have five full stories that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about some blockbuster allegations about former Governor and State Senator Julian Carroll. We're going to be talking about Kim Davis, somebody who hasn't ever come up on our show before, which is kind of surprising. We're going to be talking about the Yom Center. We're going to be talking about this thing called Operation Save America, an anti-abortion group in the state of Kentucky. And we're going to finish it off by talking about the Executive Branch Ethics Commission. So, let's go ahead and get started by talking about Julian Carroll. Last week, there were some blockbuster allegations about former governor and current state senator Julian Carroll. He's an older man. I think he's like 85 or 86. He serves in Franklin County and the surrounding central Kentucky counties in the state Senate. He was the governor in the 70s. I think he actually started either during the Nixon or Ford administration. It was like right in between the two and served.
So an older gentleman.
Yes.
Been around a long time.
Yes, been around for a long time. But what happened was Spectrum News, which used to be Time Warner Cable News and used to be CN2.
And before that, Insight.
And before that, Insight, yes, that channel. They released a report on Saturday, July 22nd, alleging that the former governor and the current state senator groped a young man and propositioned him for sex in exchange for paying for him to attend art school.
Not good.
No, it wasn't good. And if it wasn't bad enough, it also appears that Senator Carroll, you know, there was some stuff going on with the state police, which looked like, I don't want to say they swept it under the rug, but it did kind of seem like there was a lack of prosecution that would maybe not have been there if it had been somebody who wasn't Senator Julian Carroll doing these actions. The incident occurred actually over 10 years ago, and I've heard a lot of rumors about Senator Carroll, former Governor Carroll, for a long time. This is the first time any evidence has ever been published that stuff like this has occurred, even though it's stuff that I've heard potentially before and just in rumor form. So Pure Politics, the show that released this story, they have been working on the story for more than a year, or for about a year, and only recently did the victim agree to an on-camera interview, which is why it came out now. And Pure Politics suggests three avenues for further investigation. The first is why the state police didn't arrest Senator Carroll, whether or not the KBI, the investigative wing of the Kentucky State Police, investigated the allegations, and what Greg Stumbo, who was then the attorney general, knew about the investigation as it was going on. So as fallout, Senator Carroll's Democratic colleagues stripped him of his title, which was Minority Whip. After all these allegations came to light, they all unanimously called on him to resign his seat. Senator Carroll said he hadn't decided whether or not to resign, but this morning, according to the Herald Leader, Carroll said there would be absolutely no resignation. So this is going to be going on for a while. Republicans, for their part, have also expressed concern and called for further investigation. It's kind of in their court what happens, and if he doesn't resign, they can. I think the majority has to, you know, remove him from office, and obviously Republicans are the majority of the Senate. But regardless, this is a huge mess and very sad. So how about all that, Jasmine?
It's pretty awful. I don't know if he had his sights set on any other office. He's getting older, so I'm guessing not. But yeah. I guess he's just like, well, I'm not resigning.
You don't want to go down. You don't want to go out like that, I don't think, no matter what.
Right.
Yeah, and it's kind of so the story, and I said, I don't know. I don't want to know if I recommend watching it or reading it. It's just kind of gross. But in the story, The gentleman, the victim in this situation, he actually had a recording of Senator Carroll as he was requesting sex acts. So that's pretty clear that occurred. The groping is something that he's alleged. And the reason why the state police say that they didn't have an investigation into that is because there's no further proof. It was just, there was just a recording. That was all the evidence that came forth.
But we see a lot of prosecutions with one witness all the time.
That's absolutely a good point. And that's what the state police said was, like, you know, there's no law against requesting sex acts from another person. So yeah, there you go. That's a nice kickoff to the show here. So we'll see what happens here. This story is absolutely not over. So yeah. All right, Jasmine, talk to us about Kim Davis. Kim Davis.
Okay, yeah, we've never talked about her on the show. Her big spotlight in the news happened before we started My Old Kentucky Podcast, but there has been some recent news in her case. The Commonwealth of Kentucky has been ordered to pay attorney's fees to the plaintiffs in the Kim Davis case. So Kentucky must pay more than $220,000 in attorney's fees for the couples who sued Kim Davis for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. So the ACLU represented the couples in their suit against Kim Davis. So if you will remember way back when, Kim Davis refused to issue marriage licenses in 2015 after the Supreme Court's gay marriage ruling. So several couples sued, and then in August of 2015, Judge Bunning, a U.S. District Court judge for the Eastern District of Kentucky, issued a preliminary injunction ordering Davis to comply with the law. So she was ordered to comply with the law and issue the marriage licenses. But Kim Davis continued to refuse to comply, and she was ordered to be jailed for contempt of court. Contempt of court being violating a court order, and the court order was that she had to issue the marriage licenses. So that ruling came from Judge Bunning, and that is who ruled that Kentucky must pay attorney's fees as well. Judge Bunning held that Kim Davis was representing the Commonwealth in her refusal to issue marriage licenses. And so another part of this was that he said the state could have taken action against her, and they did not.
Right.
So he said that county clerks are generally classified as county officials, but that she was representing the Commonwealth by issuing or not issuing marriage licenses, because her authority over marriage licenses comes from the state, and the state didn't take action against her.
Right. So this was part of this, that either the county or the state would have had to pay based on the fact that, you know, they ruled that the people were owed the attorney fees.
Right.
And he decided that the state had to pay because she's acting on behalf of the state.
So the possible parties that could be paying them would be Kim Davis herself.
Right.
Her county or the state. And Judge Bunning held that she was representing the state in her role because the authority to issue licenses comes from the state, and the state didn't take action when she was refusing to do it. So the state is liable.
So the state could have, you know, if the state had like made moves to remove her, force her deputy to sign or something like that, then it probably would have fallen
maybe
on
the county. Yeah. She probably would not be held she wouldn't be held personally responsible because she was acting, you know, in her duty as a county official.
Right.
So it falls on the state. Last August, Judge Bunning dismissed a case that was brought by the couples, citing the executive order by Governor Bevin. And so under that order, marriage licenses no longer need to carry the name of the county clerk who issues them.
Right.
So this effectively, he was saying this issue is moot now because her name doesn't have to be on it. However, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals revived the case and sent it back to the district court. And they said that the district court's characterization of this case as simply contesting the no marriage licenses policies is inaccurate, because Ermold and Moore, those are the parties, did not seek an injunction. They sought damages.
Right. Okay.
This action is not a general challenge to her policy, but rather seeks damages for harm allegedly suffered by a specific set of plaintiffs. So he's saying, no, you know, this isn't moot because that's not what they were asking for. They were asking for damages, not just
the change in the policy. So he like declared it moot because he said the policy's changed, so this is over. And the appeal said, no, the issue wasn't what is over. The issue is damages.
Right.
Okay.
So that the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals sent it back to Judge Bunning, and that's how we got where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
In his 50-page ruling, Bunning said that he was awarding the fees under a federal law that allows attorney's fees to be granted to the prevailing party in civil rights cases. He overruled a magistrate judge who denied the attorney's fees because that judge said the plaintiffs hadn't really prevailed. Bunning, however, said, well, they got what they wanted. They got the injunction. So they are the prevailing party,
right,
and they get attorney's fees. And so Davis's attorneys argued what the magistrate judge held, that they didn't prevail because it was moot after the executive order. I am not sure if the state will appeal that.
Interesting.
I think they might. So for now, the state of Kentucky is liable for over $220,000 in attorney's fees. It's nice to hear that those couples are getting those attorney's fees paid for, but
Those are our tax dollars.
So it has consequences, right? I think this is a lesson that
State should do more to
right to get their officials to enforce the law, and now there are consequences to pay, and we are paying for it.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, so that's too bad for us having to pay those attorney fees. That's a lot of money, man. Those attorneys are expensive. They make more than you, don't they?
Oh yeah, that's more.
Maybe. Right. Hopefully they should just do some pro bono work now that they're getting that money. All right. Well, that's it for Kim Davis. Now that we're paying for her discretion or her, what is it? Discretions? That's right, isn't it? I think. Whatever.
I guess so.
Well, all right. Indiscretions. Now that we're paying for her indiscretions. There you go. All right. Well, let's move topics. Let's talk about UofL. This is another one of our favorite topics, the Yum Center. Again, one of our classic shows, a very old show about the Yum Center and its entire history. We've talked about it several times subsequently. Just to set the table for everybody about this story. Okay, first I should probably kick off by saying why we're talking about it. The University of Louisville has agreed to pay an additional $2.4 million annually in their lease for the Yum Center. So the Yum Center, of course, is where the University of Louisville plays basketball and volleyball. And it's been a subject, you know, on the show several times. There are three basic income sources for the Yum Center. That's just to set the table. The first is money from Metro Louisville, just a cash part of their budget. They pay an amount of money for the Yum Center's bonds. The Tax Increment Finance District is put in place by the state.
The TIF.
The TIF districts. TIF districts are inherently difficult to price because they're, you say it's going to increase the value of the property, but you don't know by how much. You can take a guess, and then you can guess how much money that's going to generate. But essentially, the predictions that they made ahead of the Yum Center massively overstated the amount that actually was produced. So the TIF has very, very poorly performed. The third source of revenue for the Yum Center is the University of Louisville's lease. Of course, there's other things that perform there that have to pay. Anybody's promoting a show, you have to rent the place, etc. But the University of Louisville obviously has the nicest lease. They have branding on the building. There's a big cardinal bird on the side of it. Inside, they have the floor from when they won the national championship for now. And that lease, the money that they pay for that lease, is the third largest a portion of income for the Yum Center. So the Yum Center has been in serious financial trouble for a long time. And last year, there were all these parties tried to come together to kind of shore up the financial situation of the Yum Center. So the first thing that happened was that Metro Louisville approved, in essence, an increase in their funding for the Yum Center. So before, there was like a range of funding that they could provide, but Metro Louisville approved the mayor to say, you can negotiate, and what you can negotiate with is to say, we will always pay the top range of the amount that we're going to pay. And you should go to the state and to UofL and try to negotiate them to give something as well. So Mayor Fisher, he went to the legislative session, he talked to the state senators and state representatives about changing the way that the TIF was done. And we've talked about this substantially. There was House Bill 330, it was sponsored by Joni Jenkins and the Speaker of the House, Jeff Hoover, and that eventually passed the legislature. It was what the bill did was it increased the dates. It extended the dates of the TIF financing district from 20 years to 45 years. So for 45 years, the increase in sales taxes from in the area around the Yum Center will go towards paying the bonds of the Yum Center and not towards, you know, the state coffers. The deal was almost scuttled while I was in the legislature by State Senator Chris McDaniel, who's the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. He wanted more than just promises from UofL. We talked about this while it was going on, but he said, no, unless UofL does more than just say, we promise, we're not doing anything. Scott Brinkman, who's Secretary of the Governor Bevin's Executive Cabinet, he was the one that was talking to Senator McDaniels, and he said, oh, no, UofL is going to pay $2.5 million more. And Senator McDaniel was like, no.
That's just words, right?
words are worthless. But in the end, he did acquiesce, and the bill passed. So now the final piece of the puzzle has come into place. The University of Louisville has agreed to pay $2.5 million more for their lease. This was not an easy lift for the University of Louisville. Apparently, the agreement was negotiated by the school's administration. I guess that's who was talking to Scott Brinkman during the legislative session. That was, and it was not necessarily the athletic department that did this. WDRB, who employs Marcus Green currently, is the place that has the best story on this. And he's Marcus Green has been doing reporting on the Yum Center for forever, since, I mean,
right.
when it was a dream in Jim Host's eyes. He's been reporting on this since when he worked at the Courier-Journal and now for WDRB. And his story says that the agreement reveals some conflict between the athletics department and the university administration.
Right. I'm sure that Tom Jurich doesn't like this.
Right. No. He ended up voting for it, and it took him a long time before he actually said anything. It seemed like he was very resigned. I kind of got the sense that the administration sat down ahead of time and was like, you can't kill this. We have to have this.
There's just so much pressure.
Yeah. And his allies were like, I can't believe you're not saying anything. And he was like, I support it. I promise. That's kind of how it seemed like it was going. So trustee Papa John Schnatter, he said that the deal was doomed from day one. And to be fair, he's been a skeptic of this entire project since it started.
He wanted a different location for the arena and did not think that the waterfront location was workable.
Right. So the names of the sites back in the day were the water company site and the LG&E site, which it went on to the LG&E site. I'm not even sure what was at the Yum Center before, but that was the waterfront location. And John Schnatter said, if we moved it back 6 or 7 blocks away from the waterfront, it would cost a fraction, 70% of what it actually costs. And he said, everybody's going to end up paying more. And this has been stupid. And he's right. And he seemed to say, and a lot of the other trustees said, even with all these measures that we've taken, with the Metro government paying more money, with the TIF district being extended, and with U of L paying more in their lease, we're probably not any closer to making this deal work, because the TIF has just underperformed so heavily. Well, we're going to find out. I will say this, though. The trustees at the meeting, they seem to very badly misremember the facts about why the arena was built where it was built. So there was a lot of stuff going around in this trustees meeting in the story that was reported. They were like, the government officials, they were the ones that really wanted it to be downtown. We would have been very happy for it to be away from the waterfront or even on campus. And that is not exactly how it went. The story that sticks out the most to me is when I guess it was Rick Pitino said, we've already started recruiting based on pictures of where this arena will be. Don't take it away from the waterfront. To be entirely fair, I think that U of L wanted the city and the state to build an arena on their campus, but that wasn't going to happen. So once it was going to be downtown, they really wanted it to be on the waterfront. So this is everybody's fault. I'm not saying it's just U of L's fault, but everybody kind of had to come together to pull this project back into financial alignment. Will it actually work now that all three parties have struck a deal? We'll see.
So, I feel like our listeners are probably like, yeah, we know the TIF, the lease.
Yeah.
House Bill 330, we've heard it all before.
Yeah, well, it's all finally come together. The deal is in place.
Right, all the parts.
I did think it was kind of funny. So the deal that Senator McDaniel was like, oh, we're going to pay, they're going to pay $2.5 million more. And he's like, they're going to renege at the end. And eventually, at the end of the day, they paid
$2.4.
And I bet they were just like, we're not paying what Senator McDaniel said. So whatever. All right, Jasmine, that's it for the Yum Center. Why don't you talk to us about Operation Save America?
Okay, so as we've discussed before, Kentucky has only one remaining abortion clinic, and that is the EMW clinic in Louisville. The EMW clinic has protesters outside usually every single day. If you drive through downtown Louisville ever, you will see at least a few people, usually older women, standing outside with some signs.
On the weekends, it's really heavy though.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Because of this, they have volunteers there who escort women inside the building, just kind of hold their hand, walk them in, keep them safe from protesters. But this week, it is worse than normal because Operation Save America has descended upon Louisville for a week-long protest. So we've talked about OSA on here briefly before, but obviously they are a very conservative anti-abortion group. Their website says that they unashamedly take up the cause of preborn children in the name of Jesus Christ.
Wow.
So this is their national event. Every now and then they host a big week-long national event. It's like their national convention. So not only are they protesting at the clinic's doors, they are speaking to churches, speaking with representatives about abortion legislation, and trying to get EMW shut down. But before they came, Federal prosecutors in Louisville filed a motion to enforce a buffer zone pursuant to the Federal Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Law. This isn't like a super well-known act. It's not one of the ones you think of when you think of federal law, but it's a 1994 federal law that was designed to keep people from blocking entrances to reproductive health centers.
Right.
Back in May, some OSA members were arrested and they had sat in front of the entrance to the EMW clinic, and federal prosecutors wanted a 15-by-7.5-foot buffer zone. So even that's not very big.
No, that's like...
They can get pretty close.
That's a basketball goal and a half on top of it. Yeah.
Right. So on Tuesday, OSA finally agreed to abide by the buffer zone, and they said they consider this a victory because it didn't create a long-term buffer zone ruling. Because they came to an agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office that for this week, while they're here, they will abide by the buffer zone. I think they didn't want a ruling from the federal court because it could create like some long-term precedent, maybe.
Right. There's also been talk for a long time of the Louisville Metro Council taking up this issue and passing an ordinance about buffer law.
So this is a temporary thing. So they're like, fine. This is just temporary. We'll abide by this 15-and-7.5-foot buffer zone. But OSA basically has about 1,000 members that are spread around Louisville that will be here till Saturday. I know I've seen the trucks and the signs pretty much everywhere I go downtown. And today, which is Wednesday when we're recording this, they held a 5-hour protest against abortion on Jefferson Street downtown that was full of abortion videos and graphic images. They had a big projector that was provided by another anti-abortion group called Created Equal, where they showed videos of abortions.
Ugh.
And had graphic signs and images and trucks with graphic images everywhere downtown. There was a bit of a counter protest. People brought signs and noisemakers to try to drown out their videos and their chanting. But basically, they're here. This is their big national event. They said that Louisville is a ground zero for abortions or something like that. And they are trying to get our last clinic shut down. If the EMW clinic were to shut down, we will be the first and only state with no abortion provider. So that would be very sad.
Yeah, it seems like I picked a really good week to stop working downtown.
Right. It was, I mean, I avoided like the area where they were, but I was several blocks away and could see them. And they had like balloons and signs and a big projector. I saw them setting it up while I was on my way to work this morning. Like, they were impossible to avoid, basically. And actually, I mentioned that in May, a few of them were cited when they were protesting at the clinic. Those people that were cited were actually in court a couple weeks ago, and they brought people from other states and everything to stand outside the courthouse and protest and to come to court with the people that were charged. So they had a little mini protest a couple weeks ago, but this is the big weekly national event, and they will be here until Saturday.
Yeah. They are they're a well-organized group, say what you will about them.
Right, but. And it's a lot of children.
Yeah.
So these are very graphic images they're showing, and there's like 8-year-olds holding these graphic signs, and it's pretty unpleasant.
Yeah, sounds bad. Okay, Jasmine, the last thing we're going to talk about today is the ethics complaint about Governor Bevin, which we've talked about on several shows in the past, but they have been dismissed by the Executive Branch Ethics Committee. So last week on the show, Jasmine, you were not here, but we talked about this.
I listened.
We talked about the Executive Branch Ethics Committee and their statements about Andy Beshear, and you should go back and listen to those. But just as a quick refresher, basically they said, unless Andy Beshear says he's not going to run for governor, he cannot investigate any potential ethics problems in the governor's office because they would potentially be opponents of one another. Okay, but this week, the Executive Branch Ethics Committee dismissed both of the complaints about Governor Matt Bevin and his purchase of an Anchorage home for about $1 million less than what the PVA in Louisville saw as its market value. So this isn't all that surprising. We talked a lot about how, you know, essentially Governor Bevin has stacked this commission. There's 3 people that are his appointees and 2 that were Governor Beshear's. But it is kind of surprising to me that the decision was unanimous. So both committee members appointed by Governor Beshear also voted to dismiss these complaints. The reading by the committee that led them to dismiss these complaints is very, very narrow. Or their justification for dismissing the complaint is that Neil Ramsey, who's the person who owned the home before Governor Bevin, he's not a lobbyist. He's not technically a lobbyist, and therefore nothing illegal occurred. So it's not a breach of ethics, because the only rule is you can't accept gifts from lobbyists. So if you'll remember, though, Governor Bevin actually appointed Mr. Ramsey to the pension board. So that type of pay for play, what they're saying is it doesn't even matter if it is a gift. We're not ruling it on those merits. We're not saying this wasn't a gift. We're saying if it was a gift, it doesn't matter because he's not a lobbyist. So that seems kind of crazy to me. That seems like an incredibly narrow reading of this statute. And it's kind of, I don't know, it doesn't make me feel really good that like some governor, it doesn't matter, I don't care what party they're coming from, can say, hey, I'll give you a seat on this board if you give me a kickback for me personally. And according to the Executive Branch Ethics Commission, that's totally fine, because as long as you're not registered as a lobbyist.
Did they even mention that in their like ruling about him being appointed to the pension board?
Nope, not a thing.
Okay.
They just said, right, you know, he's not a lobbyist, so therefore.
So it's fine.
So this is, okay, so here's the deal about that, though. There isn't like a report that I can read or that you can read. If you have your stuff dismissed, you get the explanation, but nobody else does. And it's kind of interesting because the story about this was broken by Kentucky Today, which is a newspaper that's owned by the Kentucky Baptist Convention. And Governor Bevin's allies frequently give stories to Kentucky Today because they see them as a friendly voice in the media. And they certainly are. They are very friendly to Governor Bevin. So after Kentucky Today published a story saying that the complaints had been dismissed, Terry Miners, who is a WHAS radio personality who often has Governor Bevin on his show, he accused the rest of the state's media of bias for not publishing anything in his Twitter.
But really, no one else probably knew anything, right? Because it's not something you can access.
Right. So Terry Miners sent out this tweet, which had a terrible Adele gif attached to it. So Terry Miners, never tweet. But anyways, Catherine Gephardt, who is actually quoted in the Courier Journal, this is what she had to say. Catherine Gephardt she's the executive director of the Executive Branch Ethics Commission. She said, typically under our statute, which is the statute that created the Executive Branch Ethics Commission, she said, typically under our statute, we cannot confirm or deny that an action occurred. But because the subject, which is the governor, publicly revealed through an article I saw on Kentucky Today, then we are allowed to confirm it. So that's what the Courier Journal, they saw this thing in Kentucky Today, they went to for a confirmation, and Kathy Gephardt said, I'm not typically allowed to even tell you what happened at all, but since, you know, it's been revealed, I can tell you, yes, we did do that. So because of that, you know, there's nothing for me to read. Governor Bevin has the explanation somewhere, I'm sure. I'm not sure. Maybe the Mr. Belisles, who filed the complaints, maybe they have explanations, but those are the only people who would receive those. So at the end of the day, essentially, that leaves Andy Beshear as the only arm left to investigate this situation.
Who cannot do so if he plans on running against Governor Bevin. Right,
exactly. And last week on the show, I asked Ethan and Carmen what they thought about whether or not what they should do. And I mean, at the end of the day, here's what I have to say. You have to do it. You have to say, I'm not going to run for governor. I need to investigate this, because somebody's got to investigate
this. Right, and that it's such a weird thing, because I can definitely see how it could be a conflict. But at the same time, I would say that a lot of attorney generals have their eye set on running for governor, probably. Yep. So this doesn't just affect this administration. You know, it could affect a lot of future administrations. So it's kind of weird, and it's a tough spot. But I think I would tend to agree with you. Andy Beshear is still young. He can
run next time.
Sit out, right?
Right. Okay, Jasmine. Are you ready for some quick hits?
Go for it.
All right, great. Okay. Kentucky suspended tax breaks to the Ark Park due to the park transferring its ownership to its nonprofit. So they were like, nope, no more tax breaks for you. The state park has said that the state has said that the park is in violation of the agreement it struck to provide it with the $18 million in tax incentives. After that, the Ark Park then transferred the ownership of the Ark back to a for-profit.
We definitely need to do a show on this. There's been so much developing
right
with the Ark Park, and they have a gay boat now. So
super gay boat. Right. Okay. And then the other quick hit we have this week is that before we jump to that, we should probably explain the gay boat thing. People know, right? Maybe. You can't assume anything.
Okay. Their arc is now lit up in rainbow colors at night because they are trying to take back the rainbow.
Well, it's the story of the arc in the Bible is that's where the rainbow comes from, but it's lit up like the gay pride parade. Or the gay pride flag. So it's a big gay boat.
Yep.
Okay, the other quick hit. Moody's, the bond rating agency, has downgraded Kentucky's bond rating, moving them from AA2 to AA3 due to the budget shortfall and ongoing issues with the pension. Relative to other places you can invest, you know, you could invest in the sovereign debt of Venezuela, or you could invest in, you know, my cousin's, you know, startup company. Kentucky's bonds are relatively safe. But among its peers, among the other states, Kentucky's among the worst in the very low tier in terms of the strength of their bonds. Moving from one bond rating to the next always increases the interest costs that associated with you sending out bonds. You have to charge, you have to provide more interest to your bondholders once you have a lower security on your bonds. So that is it for Moody's. We made it through another show, Jasmine, and just me and you.
Right. We were doing a lot of catch up, a lot of stories that have been going on.
So much stuff.
Yep.
We're caught up now, though.
We are.
It's been pretty exciting for a summer. Usually, like, no session. I was like, no, what are we going to talk about?
What are we going to do?
We got plenty, but we got through it. Okay, Jasmine. How can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at myoldkypod is our handle. They can like our Facebook page. We post our show notes on Medium, and you can find our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice.
Excellent. Thank you for listening, and we will see you guys next week. And the meadows in the blue.